Your dreams are bigger, bolder, and more badass than the life you're living now, but something just keeps getting in the way. Join certified coach and former therapist Diane Wingert for the Driven Woman podcast. She'll show you how to get rid of whatever is holding you back so you can stop spinning your wheels and up-level your life. Get ready to hop in and buckle up. This is the Driven Woman podcast, and we're heading for the fast lane.
Hey, Driven Woman, and welcome back. Have I got something special in store for you today? If you are an entrepreneur and you also have a trauma history, and believe it or not, many entrepreneurs do, you are going to want to lean all the way in. My guest today is Nicole Lewis-Keeper, who is a therapist, coach, consultant, speaker, certified by the Brené Brown Daring Way and Dare to Lead facilitator, and author of a brand new book that we are going to talk about today. Nicole has developed a fascinating body of work around the intersection of trauma and entrepreneurship. She calls herself a business therapist and is on a mission to help entrepreneurs create a trauma-free business so their inner kiddo can become a true CEO. The name of her brand new book is How to Love Your Business, Stop Recreating Trauma, and Have a Business You Love and That Loves You Back. I bought this book the day it was released, devoured it. It's a pretty quick read, and wrote down my questions in anticipation of the interview. We are going to do a deep dive into several areas of the book that I found the most fascinating, including trauma and boundaries, how to love your inner critic, and how to create an emotional sustainability plan for your business. These are nuggets you have never heard from anyone else, I promise you. Today's pod praise comes from April Adams Pertwee, who was a recent guest on the podcast. April says, "Diane is a force. I have fallen in love with her calm yet direct delivery and smart topics here on the podcast. Her stories are so relatable and chock full of wisdom. I've added this podcast to the top of my weekly rotation." April, thank you so much for this wonderful review. I'm sure you know how much it means to me. And now, without any further delay, I bring you the one and only Nicole Lewis-Keeper with wisdom for us on how to keep trauma out of our business. Buckle up. Here we go. Well, this is a conversation that I have been very eager to have and to share, because our guest today, Nicole Lewis-Keeper, is an expert on something everyone listening right now knows a little bit about or should, and that is the connection between trauma and entrepreneurship. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I've been really excited about this. And you have some very special news. Your latest book, How to Love Your Business, was just released in April, and I devoured it. Luckily, it's a quick read because my brain doesn't like long books, but I am just buzzing with questions to ask you.
Yay.
Can I ask you first, what prompted you to write this book at this time?
Oh, well, the book wanted to be written. I tried very hard not to write it. But it wanted to be written. So it really honestly took me about 4 years to get to this place of completion of it. From the story that's in the book about the moment that I recognized my relationship with my business was not that great, to, you know, all the work I've done since then. And so it's been quite a journey to get here, even for a short read, you know, because it requires you to manage your attention and to ask for help and to write the book in the way that works for you because of the way that I process information. And, you know, and so it's been quite a journey to get there. And I think another reason why I wrote it is that I talk about this topic a lot and people will ask me, "Have you written a book?" And I'm like, damn, No, not yet. So I think that that was part of it too, is to have something that I could share with people and say, yes, I wrote a book. Yes, here it is. Now I can speak at your event because I'm an author, you know?
You know, these days, yeah, no, but you're right, because these days it seems like having a book has replaced the business card, and yeah, it's a door opener, and people don't even have to read it to give you credibility for having written it. However, this is not that kind of book. This, to me, is a must read for anyone who is an entrepreneur, who is self-employed, who is a coach, a consultant, a thought leader, anyone who makes a living independently through their gifts and their talents and their efforts. And the reason why I feel so strongly about it is because you and I both have a background as licensed clinical social workers, therapists, coaches, speakers, trainers, and so forth. And we both care a lot about the mental health of entrepreneurs. And I think what's probably not so commonly known is anybody who's read the statistics knows that there is a very high incidence of mental health conditions, struggles, disorders, problems, whatever you want to call them, among entrepreneurs. And some people say, well, working for yourself, you got to be crazy to do that. Or if you work for yourself, it's so hard. You have to work so much. You don't have support. It's very risky. So that makes you crazy. I think there's a lot of reasons why people with mental health conditions self-select for entrepreneurship. But there's no doubt that many people with mental health conditions have them because of a history of trauma. And because I specialize in ADHD coaching for entrepreneurs, what I see is missing is when people go to a therapist, they focus on the trauma, but not necessarily the ADHD. And most entrepreneurs would not recognize that trauma has anything to do with business. And that's where you come in.
Yeah.
So How to Love Your Business is a very compelling title. And, you know, we've talked about this. We share the philosophy and the belief that if you have a business, you're in a relationship with that business. And it's in a relationship with you. And if it's not a healthy one, you're going to struggle more than you need to. So I want to go right to boundaries, because boundaries is something that my clients, my audience, struggle with. And I know that women have been conditioned to have difficulty setting boundaries in particular. So let's talk about boundaries from your perspective and how you see boundaries within the context of business, the different types of boundaries we need to monitor, be aware of, protect, and so forth.
Yeah, I think it's such a big and important foundational piece of life and business is, first of all, claiming that boundaries are appropriate, you know, and that they're yours to have, and knowing what that looks like. Because as you said, there's a lot of socialization around being of service and not having boundaries. And there's a lot of, you know, connection around value, about being available to people. So there's tons of socialization and conditioning around being boundaried, being, you know, giving you like a bad rap, you know. Lots of name calling around that, particularly with women. Yeah, I'm not going to go there, but that tends to happen, right?
We have an explicit rating on the Driven Woman, so you go anywhere you like, my friend.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so how many women do you know that have, you know, been very boundaried, have created very clear expectations about what is okay, what's not okay for them, and they immediately get called a bitch, right? And
it's true.
Because, yeah, it's so true. And it's not the same expectation for men, you know, and let's just name it, because it's not. We have been socialized and conditioned to see this differently. And also, I think that, you know, when it comes to our socialization around boundaries for, you know, men in workplaces, is that, you know, there's a lot of, I think, expectation around, you know, drive and working long hours, too. So I think it goes both ways. It's not just, you know, one way, we're conditioned differently, but the boundary still needs to be there. And so what I was seeing a lot within the clients that I was working with and the research that I was doing around how trauma shows up in entrepreneurship is that the boundary situation was pretty poor across the board, because people had not considered what those might be for them. And if you have a trauma background, a lot of the times is that someone has disrespected your boundaries, not allowed you to have them. You were maybe even punished for trying to assert one, right? There's a lot of emotional lava and trauma that gets connected to assertion of a boundary.
Mm-hmm.
And so that comes up in their business. And so the way it will play out is, you know, a poor boundary around the time that you work, the people that you want to work with, you know, your calendar, your finances and revenue within your business, like what you're going to charge and what you're not going to charge.
Mm-hmm.
It comes up in every corner of someone's business, the lack of boundaries or how that plays out. Like it's just there. And it's so, so important. And I don't think people look at, oh, you mean having a calendar is a boundary? Yeah. Having a inbox response go back out to somebody so that you don't have to respond to it, that's a boundary. Mm-hmm.
Not making yourself available when the client wants to meet, but when it works for your business, your lifestyle, and your needs.
Mm-hmm. Not, you know, donating to every cause for everybody that shows up on your doorstep because you are a business. That is a boundary to say, you know, this is who we're supporting this year as a company, and we're really proud to do so. I wish you luck and the best in your endeavor. But I will not be donating to that cause this year because I'm already supporting this other one. That's a boundary.
mm-hmm. Not being available 24/7 to your clients, to your team, to whomever, simply because we now have the technology that would allow that.
Yeah.
Right.
Uh-huh. And that internal boundary, you know, it always comes down to, you know, what kind of boundary am I going to set for myself around what I think is okay for me and what is not okay. You know, like it always comes down to us first. I so wish that we could work external, you know, outward in, but it just doesn't work that way. The boundary comes with us internally first.
I remember when I was still a clinical social worker working in a nonprofit and supervising and hiring therapists. And one of the first questions I would ask, even a trainee, even a graduate student who was doing an internship with the agency, I would ask them, how long do you intend to be in this profession? As one of the first questions. And they were like, wow, I haven't even gotten the job yet. I'm like, no, I want you to understand something. This is a very emotionally demanding profession, as is entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to think about the long game. We're going to get into this a little bit later with your concept of emotional sustainability and having a plan for that. Mm-hmm. But if we don't have boundaries between work and life, between us and our team, between us and our clients, between us and our money, all of these things, scope creep is inevitable.
Yeah.
Overworking and burnout is probably inevitable. And especially if you are a giver, you are any kind of a helping person, and you pride yourself on, quote, being there for others, you are at very high risk for all kinds of boundary violations, and some you will even invite and be proud of. I can't tell you, you probably hear this at least as often as I do, Nicole, how so many of our clients will say, I always over-deliver. My clients have, you know, come to expect that from me. And they have a big smile on their face. I'm like, okay, how's that working for you? Long pause.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Boundary issue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have been conditioned to believe that the client comes first and that they'll go away if we set a boundary, you know, that they're more important because they're giving us money or whatever they, you know, exchanges. And that's just not true.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not true, you know, but a lot of people operate under that belief. And I think that people who overdeliver create more problems for their clients personally, because then that client now has to attend to something that you didn't agree upon. So I see it very differently when we do that.
Well, I think it's like the way I used to feel about being a therapist and a supervisor and even a parent, is that if I allow too much, I'm creating an unhealthy dependency. And at some point, the relationship needs to end. They won't be your clients for life. Your kids are hopefully not going to live at home indefinitely. And at some point, you are going to retire, you're going to sell your business, you're going to do something else. And then what? So not having any boundaries, I absolutely agree that it creates more problems than it solves. But unpacking that load, all the cultural conditioning, all the scarcity mindset, all the feeling that, well, if I say I won't, they'll just go somewhere else and then I won't have a business anymore. That can be a bit to untangle for people, and
really
especially
is.
Hard for people
it
with
really
trauma.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because, you know, trauma is usually a wounding around your personal boundary, you know, and or a removal of it. Or and so when people have trauma, and I'm saying to them, you need to set a boundary in your business, and they don't know how to do that because, you
they
know,
don't know
they
how
have,
to do it.
No, they have all this patterning around their childhood where boundaries were not seen, you know, as they weren't allowed to have them, you know, basically. So if we have to look at, you know, where have you operated under, you know, appropriate boundaries? Can't give me an example? Okay, so we need to work on that first. Like, it's just, you know, you can't expect people to have something that they haven't learned. And if you didn't learn it before, now your business is a great opportunity in which to learn how to set boundaries. So let's use it as that outlet.
Well, I know that we've had a lot of the same mentors and teachers, and you and I have both heard it said that being an entrepreneur is the ultimate personal growth opportunity. Mm-hmm. Because sooner or later, you're going to have to face all of your stuff. You may not know where it came from, but I love that you are a business therapist, because helping people understand that everything from the past has come with you in the form of who you are, your mindset, your beliefs, and all of that. And of course, it's going to show up in your business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of always am like, who would have thought it wouldn't? Like, it's like, I'm surprised that we are surprised about that. So
it's true. I had a new client meeting yesterday, and I mentioned that, you know, she's having trouble with her staff. And I said, well, of course, any unresolved issues that we have with other people from childhood are going to come to work with us. Mm-hmm. So if you have hired people on your team who had difficulty with authority figures, they're going to have difficulty with you. And if you mm-hmm. have people on your team who have unresolved sibling issues, they're going to have trouble with their colleagues. Why wouldn't that be the case? Mm-hmm. She's like, well, now that you mention it, you know, and I hope someday, maybe you will be the one to create this, that there will be something in the curriculum in business school, especially entrepreneur tracks, for the mental health of entrepreneurs. We've had some high profile suicides in the last mm-hmm. couple of years. And it's almost like that's unfortunately what it takes for some people to be paying attention, whereas everyone else seems to be unaware. Do you ever feel like you're shouting into the abyss and you're the only one who gets it?
Yes. And I think part of it is that, you know, people focus on the mental health diagnosis and they pathologize it in a way. And I just want to scream at the top of my lungs, you know, the majority of the mental health challenges that people have, they are trauma responses. They are not within themselves a diagnosis. You know, it is depression due to trauma. It is anxiety due to trauma, you know, like, and I think that we don't make that connection. And I think it's unfortunate. And so that's one of the things I get on the soapbox about for sure, is that, you know, there's a connection between this. It's not the depression first, it's the trauma response. So there's that. And I actually gave a talk at Wharton 2 weeks ago, and I just sat there thinking about this. I was like, I would really, really love if business schools would invest some time in exploring the emotional components around the desire to be entrepreneurial and to have your own business and how that can play out from a mental health standpoint. Because it is, you know, there's a huge toll that it can take on people. And as you said, we've had some pretty high profile suicides as of late, and that's not an isolated
incident. That's the tip of the iceberg, right?
It really is. It really is.
And I think because both you and I have the clinical training background, both you and I are coaches, both you and I are neurodivergent, both you and I have chosen to break away from working for other people and work for ourselves. We experience all of these things and we both have a trauma background. Mm-hmm. So we have had the opportunity to experience this as well as learn about it. And so to me, maybe it gives us an awareness of things that other people may not recognize, but everything I've learned, even if you just take ADHD, for example, mm-hmm. very, very significant percentage of entrepreneurs have ADHD, whether they're officially identified or not. And it may, in some people's minds, predispose one towards becoming an entrepreneur for all kinds of reasons. But adults with ADHD, a very significant percentage of them also have a trauma background for reasons we don't have time to get into today. So it seems to me that just that one group of people could keep both of us busy and many others for the rest of our lives, just trying to reach them and teach them and help them see the connection between ADHD, trauma, and entrepreneurship. One of the things I've noticed with my clients, because I work almost exclusively with women, is something you covered extensively in chapter 8, and that is the inner critic. I don't think I've ever met any woman, much less a client, or who hasn't said, I'm mean to myself. My inner voice is not very nice. And, you know, a lot of people refer to this as the inner critic, and that's an easy way to think about it, because usually we don't have someone whispering sweet nothings in our ear. We have someone who's like our little tormentor. And you had a very, very interesting take on it, where I want you to explore it fully with us, where you talk about the different identities that the inner critic can have, from the worrier, the insecure bluffer, all the way to the annihilator. Those great names, by the way. And how we can have a totally different relationship with that inner voice by having a deeper understanding of the purpose it serves. The purpose it serves, I loved this chapter so much, Nicole, is not to tear us down, is not to hold us back, is not to fill us with doubt and depression, but something entirely different. Mm-hmm. What is that?
So I think, first of all, it's a biological imperative. You know, we're wired to, you know, to have that part of our brain and our nervous system respond, you know, to keep us safe. So, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of people don't realize that your inner critic actually has a job for a reason, and that it's really an ancient part of you. And so when we can acknowledge that, I think it goes a long way to understanding, like, okay, so I'm supposed to have this, right? It's supposed to keep me safe. To say, you know, why would you do that? Like, don't go near that edge of that cliff, or like whatever. But what happens, it becomes the voice of the people, you know, who made us feel unsafe, unseen, or whatever, when we're growing up. So it begins to take on like a personal voice, right? As opposed to this biological need to stay safe. I actually was talking to someone last week, and I said, listen, you know, quit beating yourself up for comparing yourself to other people. Our nervous system is wired to compare ourselves to determine, are you safe? Are you unsafe? Right?
Yes.
It's just part of it, you know? So, and so I was taught very much so, you know, from a therapy standpoint, I understood that we call it like the tapes that play from your childhood that kind of direct how you see yourself. But then when I guess, you know, started my own business, I got into this world of coaching and personal development. It was like, kill the inner critic, you know,
smash it, crush it.
Yeah, it's a saboteur. It's going to keep you from doing all the things. And I completely bought into that. In fact, I wrote an ebook called Fire Your Inner Critic. And but what I know to be different now is that our inner critic is there for a reason. And I think that it is a protector of those younger versions of us. I call them your inner kiddos. So your 7-year-old, your 10-year-old, like whomever had an experience where they felt unsafe, unseen, uncared for, that critic kind of takes over to protect us. And so that if we recognize it and we just take a minute and just say, I hear you, like I recognize that this critical voice has come up. I'm not necessarily supposed to believe what it's telling me right here, right now. But if I stop and say, I hear you, what do you need here? That I believe, in my theory, is that inner critic will step aside, and that we will hear the voice of that younger version of us, or that part of us that has felt unseen or unheard or feels unsafe. And so when we ask it what is going on and what is needed, we will get an answer as to what the solution there is. I need to feel safe, or I need to be dismissed from the room, or I need, you know, I'm trying to feel like I'm smart here, right? You know, like there's some desire that is needed, some mechanism for safety. So that inner critic really is there to show us like where's something that needs to be healed, where's something that we need to attend to. And so, but when we shut it down and we kill it and we're constantly in battle with it, trying to quit it from doing its job, then we stay in battle with it and we lose the opportunity to really understand and learn about ourselves and what might need to have a little bit of healing attention there. And so, you know, it can show up for people in different ways. And, you know, like in the book, you know, I give them the names like, like the worrier, you know, some of the most common voices that'll come up with my clients are the worrier that's kind of like wringing its hands like, oh,
do you really want to do that? And don't you think, Nicole, that these voices tend to be most activated when we're about to do something bigger, more visible, for example? It's like, you know, it's normal to think, of course I feel nervous. I've never done this before. I don't know if I can do this. I don't know how to do this. Yeah. I don't know if it's going to turn out. So of course you're going to feel afraid. And of course it makes sense that you would be thinking, maybe I shouldn't do this, but how do you identify the worrier voice? Like, what is it actually saying to you?
So for the example I give in here is like, you know, you haven't heard, maybe you just pitched a really big client, like you sent a proposal and you haven't heard back from them. And so that worrier is taking all the responsibility, like something must have gone wrong, they must not have liked me, you know, because there's lack of information. And so as opposed to just following up with that client and saying, I haven't heard back from you, wanted to see where you're at, do you have any other questions? The worrier is going to ring and ring and ring the hands and take all, you know, just, you know, stay in that loop. Whereas maybe with, you know, a client that is not at this, you know, maybe this price point, this package or whatever before, you wouldn't do that. And you're right. It really does come to a lot of experiences where we're pushing ourselves, we're outside of our comfort zone, because that's when that critic kicks in and it's like, why are you doing this?
Right.
Like, what can I do to tell?
Do you really think this is a good idea?
Right. What can I do to keep you from doing this? Like, how awful do I need to make you feel in order for you to stay on the narrow path here? And so, but if we recognize that and say, I recognize that you are trying to keep me safe here, inner critic, and you got a really nasty way of going at it, but I understand what you're trying to do. I appreciate you. And I'm still going to do this. So what can I do to get out of this warrior loop? Check back in with the client, you know, do something else by recognizing what the true issue is, as opposed to falling prey to that critic's voice.
So one thing I wasn't 100% clear on in reading the book is, do you believe that they're like sequential? Like, it's almost like the first line of defense is the worrier. And when that doesn't stop you in your tracks, then the insecure bluffer comes on board and takes a shot at you. And when that fails, then the annihilator gets out the big guns. Or do different people have, maybe they only have the annihilator and they go straight to that. They don't have a worrier. Like, that's one thing I wasn't really clear on. Do you think like our brain just keeps throwing down different cards to see which one we'll pick up? Or do each of us have like a particular voice that's our
I think we all have all of them. I think that different people have different voices that are louder. So, for example, I grew up in a household where my father was very worried. He was worried a lot. Like when you think of like the worried, like, is this going to work out all right? That they like that? Like, he's a hand reader, right? And so that voice for me comes up first. But for someone else, you had a really highly critical parent, which I had that too. But, you know, if they had a really highly critical parent, you know, that annihilator voice might come first. I kind of feel like we have all of them. They're just a little bit different in their loudness. So for me, it would probably go in that order. The worrier, so that didn't work. So now I'm going to bluff you. And then after that, the annihilator would come out and just say, okay, you are not good enough for this. Do not do this thing.
Yeah, do not pass
go. Who are you to write a book?
Who are you? You know, I just started following someone on Instagram who has this series of posts that she does that start with, how dare you? And I remember that was, I had the critical mother, and that was one of her favorite slogans, how dare you? And I love that one of your accomplishments is that you are a Daring Way certified facilitator. And I love how Brené Brown has appropriated dare and being daring, because so many of us, especially in a certain generation, heard how dare you. And boy, that one was very good at stopping us in our tracks. And a lot of us have that voice now that says, you know, the whole imposter syndrome, imposter complex thing that so many people talk about is like, how dare you? Mm-hmm. Who are you to do this? Mm-hmm. And that tends to be very effective as well at stopping people in their tracks. But I love that your approach is much kinder, much gentler, much more respecting of our different parts in our history. Mm-hmm. And I think the part that really spoke the loudest to me was not only that we can actually make friends with our inner critic or inner critics, some people have a committee, but that to ask the question, what do you need? I think that is like mind blown, because just instead of fighting with you or ignoring you, they say, oh yeah, there you are. Here you are again, you know, but to actually say, oh yeah, hey, what's going on? What do you need?
You can name it too. You know, a lot of people will give their critic, like I have a friend who named her Zelda, you know, and so you can name it as well to make it an interpersonal relationship if you want to do that. One of the ways that my critic shows up that is very much involved in my business is I have an inner kiddo, and she's a 16-year-old named Sadie, and I don't have multiple personality, you know, but her voice is very Sadie-like, and she's like, this is stupid. Why are we here? Everybody sucks. Let's go home, you know? So, you know, if I stop and ask her what she needs, she's going to want to leave the room and not have to deal with networking. Like, that's just, that voice is very much connected to that. So if I continually fight with her, you know, what am I going to do? I'm going to spend all my energy in battle with her as opposed to saying, well, what do you need here? Like, I hear you in my ear saying all these people are dumb. All the people in this room are not dumb.
Yeah. And the speakers, I love the story that you told in the book, how you go to a networking event, you drive there in the frickin' snow. And you go there to network, but then you sit at a table in the back and don't talk to anybody. And then, of course, you're disappointed and you're thinking the whole time, oh, this person doesn't know what they're talking about. These people are all dumb. And I'm like, I've definitely gone down that road. And
it's protection. Like,
because what would happen if we went and sat next to somebody new and said hello? Like, rejection sensitivity alert, you know? So
exactly.
Yeah. The sad thing is that for so many of us, disappointment is our most familiar feeling.
Yeah.
I don't like the term comfort zone because there's nothing comfortable about that, but it's so familiar that we don't really recognize it as a situation that needs to be addressed.
Yeah. When you were talking about the how dare you in your head, the thing that comes up for me was, what were you thinking? You know, because when you grow up, you know, with an ADHD brain, and I'm 50, so, you know, no one was paying attention to that. So I got a lot of, what were you thinking? And so that's when my voice pops up. It's like, what were you thinking applying for that? What were you thinking, you know, writing a book? What were you thinking, you know, what did you think was going to happen? You don't get to have those things because you're not smart enough. You're not present enough. You can't pay attention enough. You know, all that, you know, so.
No, thank you for reminding me of that. What were you thinking is something I have said to myself probably 100,000 times. And when I answer myself, I usually have to admit I wasn't. I just, it was impulsive. I just thought it was a good idea. And so I threw myself at it and later realized, oh, not so much, you know, and that, that one's on speed dial. One of the other things that I really got from the book that was very, very important to me is I talk to my clients a lot about creating systems in their business that are simple, streamlined, and sustainable. Especially when you have ADHD, we have a tendency to overcomplicate things without realizing it. And then we get overwhelmed and then we don't want to do it anymore. So it's like, well, how can we remove the extra bits that aren't really contributing anything to make this simple so that it can be sustainable? But you took the concept of sustainability in business to another level that really spoke to me. And that is emotional sustainability. In fact, you encourage your clients to create an emotional sustainability plan. Can we talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, I used to joke and I would say, you know, when you go to business school or you go speak with a mentor about starting a business or whoever you talk to about the possibility of starting a business, or you just start one like I did and don't talk to anybody.
Just joking.
Typically, typically, you know, no one's asking you how you want to feel about it, you know, how you want to relate to it. What do you need to feel supported? You know, they're going to give you a sales funnel, a marketing plan, all these things, but no one asks you how you want to feel in the business. Like, what does that look like for you to be supported? You know, where do you need to look around the corners, because where you tend to get tripped up emotionally? You know, where does your anxiety tend to come up? You know, like, no one's really asking you those questions. And so those are the questions that I ask my clients are, you know, basically we identify, like, where is it that you tend to get tripped up and tend to have these patterns where you find yourself having poor boundaries, or you find yourself being super critical of yourself or walking away from an opportunity. So we don't get too deep into it, but we do identify, like, where are you going to get tripped up so that we can account for that, right? What relationship do you have with your business now? Does it serve you? What relationship would you like to have? What boundaries do you need? Where do you tend to have difficulties in either visibility or money? And so what we do is we start to piece this together to create a plan for them so that they know how to support themselves emotionally within their business, so that they know. I tend to, like, for example, I had a client who, very driven, very, you know, just exacting, right? Mm-hmm. And because of her success and because of the way that she presented to the world, she tended to attract a lot of employees who tended to be more dependent, right? And passive, because they were really attracted to her power. And that was highly triggering to her. It was really difficult. And so part of her emotional sustainability plan was to be very explicitly clear in her job description and the interviews of the people that she was working with, so that she could create a staff that actually was able to support her and that she could allow to support her, because she knew that that was a place where she gets tripped up. So that's part of her emotional sustainability plan, is knowing that about herself and making allowances for it. So it's, yeah, no one asks you how you want to feel in your business, do they?
No one, Nicole. I mean, this is like, your contributions to the field are, I hope you know how meaningful and important they are, because the questions that no one is asking may be the most important questions of all. The rate of failure in entrepreneurship is so high. And I just have to wonder how many people who flamed out, who crashed and burned, or who just thought, I can't do this. This isn't for me. It's not going the way I thought. Obviously, I'm not meant to be an entrepreneur. I'm going back to corporate. Who would have been able to remain as entrepreneurs if only they had understood this is actually a relationship, and you can love your business and your business can love you back.
Exactly.
Like, that's wow. So I think everyone listening should get this book right now, gobble it up just like I did. I have it on Kindle, so I couldn't take notes, but I highlighted with my finger a lot, because you can do. But if they get to the end of the book, Nicole, and think, this is awesome. I mean, you have courses, you have the Do No Harm Intensive, you work with people short-term, long-term. So they can obviously go to your website, and I will have all your links in the show notes. But on this specific topic of loving your business, when they get to the end of the book and they're like, what's my next step? What is their next step?
Well, the next step that I would recommend, and it's been so beautiful because there are people who have read the book and have reached out to me, even literally just this morning, and said, this is amazing. Now what? And so the now what is, if you want to do a deeper dive on it, I actually have a course called Love Your Business School. And it's a course where you can go through the concepts and the framework within the book in a little bit of a deeper way. And with me, you know, they're all recorded video modules and some extra worksheets and all that to really kind of bring the book alive in a way for you to move through it. And there's even more in the course, obviously, you know, regarding the impact of trauma on entrepreneurship in a little bit more of a detailed way. So I would say, you know, the course comes next for you to really kind of move through it, embody it, have the worksheets, go through the exercises with me, with you. in theory. I'm there with you.
Yeah, because they'll see the videos, they'll see your voice, they'll hear your voice, see your face. And also, I think one of the things I meant to mention earlier, Nicole, is at the end of each of the chapters, you have an exercise. And I think that's ultimately, I mean, I don't know about you, but I've read, I don't know how many self-help books, and most of them just go right on the shelf, becoming shelf help. But having exercises where you say, okay, I got this concept. I got this befriend your inner critic. I got the boundaries. I got the emotional sustainability plan. It will be out of sight, out of mind the minute you go to the next page, especially if you have ADHD. Mm-hmm. But having an exercise where you can start to implement, you can get a little practice, you can take it a little deeper is fantastic. But if they want even more, they can get this course and begin to understand you're in this relationship anyway. Wouldn't it be nice if you loved each other? I mean,
I know, right?
Right?
Yes. And I didn't want to overwhelm people with too many exercises in the book either. So it was kind of a fine
just
balance.
Right. Yeah. It's just right. And I think especially because we're both neurodivergent, we're both entrepreneurs, we're both busy people. It's like, just give me a bite. Yeah. And I think it's one of the reasons why so many people don't finish courses, because it's too much. Mm-hmm. And knowing how your book was just long enough, the exercises were just long enough, I strongly suspect that this How to Love Your Business School course is going to be right-sized as well. So I will put all the links for all these things in the show notes. And thank you so much for sharing this. I appreciate and respect and admire you so much.
Thank you so much for giving me a space to speak about it. It's so very important. And knowing that you appreciate it means a lot, because, you know, we have such a similar background. So it really is very meaningful. So thank you.
Awesome. You're welcome. Hey, it's Diane. Can I be honest with you? At the beginning of each new year, I always told myself, this is the year I'm going to get my habits dialed in. This is the year I'm going to be crystal clear about my goals, and I'm going to crush them. This is the year I'm going to get my shit together on every level, and I'm going to do it all by myself. Been there, done that, got a whole stack of t-shirts. But you know, it wasn't until I started working with my own coach that I realized what a difference it makes to have guidance, support, and accountability from someone who's not only like-minded, but like-brained. Yeah, I'm talking about another driven woman, entrepreneur, who also has ADHD and has got it going on. I have two openings in my signature one-on-one 12-week coaching program, and one of them might have your name on it. There's a link to a free consult with me in the show notes if you think this might be the year that you really get serious and go all in on an ADHD-friendly business and life. While you're thinking about that, have a listen to what one of my client's success stories has to say about the difference it made to work with me.
Well, one thing that you helped give me insight on is how sensitive I am. And because I'm an empath, being in traffic and loud noises throughout the day, just getting to home, that alone was really draining. And now working from home, it's like I'm able to conserve that energy. And working with the parents to really teach them kind of concepts and bigger things that have a bigger impact, which is one thing that you also mentioned, was because I was working so much, I didn't have time to do the things that were meaningful to me. And that included learning, getting into the grind. You kind of just like, okay, well, I'm just going to do, instead of really stepping back and looking at more strategic ways to have, a longer term plan.
You've been listening to the Driven Woman Podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to the Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.